Hello, Dr. Dyke Drummond here at the home of thehappymd.com in beautiful Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the latest episode of the Physicians on Purpose podcast. Tools so you can recognize and prevent your own burnout. Stories of burnout put to its highest and best use. And wellness leadership strategies. Everything you need to be a physician on purpose. Hello again, Dr. Dyke Drummond here from our home in beautiful Seattle, Washington, with the latest edition of the Physicians on Purpose podcast. Today I have Dr. John Jerica, a family doctor and a specialist in non-clinical careers, side gigs, all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about the peri-retirement period when you're either pre-contemplation or contemplating retirement. What are some options for some different and creative side gigs and part-time gigs that you could fiddle around with in that time when you're getting used to the idea of potentially having a piece of your life where you don't see patients that occurred in your adulthood rather than when you didn't see patients when you were 5 or 6, right? Years old, that is. Dr. Jerica, welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Now, let's see. Side gigs, part-time. Most doctors are usually all in or not, right? All in or on sabbatical because they burned out.
Yeah.
And typically, a lot of doctors will pin themselves to a job, especially back in the day when we owned our own practices. It would be our practice and we'd be all in, totally identified with being a doctor and being a doctor in that particular practice. Now, these days with 75% of doctors, employees, big multinational corporations, there's a whole bunch of folks that are employees, but not particularly bought in to what they're serving, the Kool-Aid in the organization that you belong to. So it's perhaps a little bit easier to separate yourself from your career at retirement, but still doctors are used to working, man. What do I do if I'm not seeing patients? That's the crisis that I see all the time. How can we help them?
Well, I think there's a lot of things we can do. But what I've heard from some of my friends and colleagues is that one of the reasons they don't retire sooner is they don't have any kind of an off-ramp. It's like all or none. If they're employed, that's almost always true. Although there are some even large employers that will allow you to go part-time or job share. You find those every once in a while. And of course, I'm used to talking to people that are just fed up with medicine. Even people as they approach retirement, some of them have been sort of half burned out or mostly burned out or just haven't really done anything about it. So to me, we have a bunch of people that just leave medicine and do things, but there's a lot of jobs that they go to, at least a subset of those, that they're part-time. They can be done part-time at the beginning and become full-time. So I think a lot of those and some newer ones I've discovered recently make a really good sort of off-ramp where you can do it part-time, learn about it, see if you like it. And then if you do, you could do it part-time and stop your other job. It kind of cushions you a little bit because you still got a little bit of income. I mean, I've gone through that myself. You know, I stopped a full-time job, then now I'm part-time and, you know, going into retirement. And it's kind of cold turkey when you go from having, you know, money coming in to not having any money coming in. And you feel uneasy about just starting to pull out of your retirement accounts. So I think there's an option to just do the in-between and try something and see if you like it.
And now these days with the rise of virtual platforms and virtual medicine, you don't even have to leave your house to be working part-time and making some cash, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, most of the best like part-time side gigs and side hustles you can do are remote. I mean, with the pandemic, it took anything that was even partially remote and sent it into, you know, this to overdrive to where most things can be done remotely, even though we didn't think they could be done remotely five years ago.
Also led to the waist up wardrobe, right?
That's right. Exactly.
So give us some examples of some of these jobs. You were saying that there's some ones that have come up recently that seem to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just briefly, I would say that for the things that we probably already know about, you can do things like part-time teaching or be a medical writer, you know, something like that. People oftentimes do that in addition to their regular clinical job anyway. Maybe be a part-time surveyor for an organization like Joint Commission or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But there's some interesting ones recently. I think maybe I'll start with the one that I know the least amount at the moment. I've been exposed to chart reviews of various sorts, and you can go to an organization that has a list of independent review organizations and find these things. But the one that came up lately that I was not aware of is doing Social Security disability chart reviews. So this isn't doing an IME or examining a patient. It's just carving out a few hours a week or up to 10 hours a week. And there's a multi-layer process for people that are applying for disability to get it through the Social Security Administration. And in the middle of a couple of those levels involve either a nurse or a physician. And so it's very simple. You remotely, you get the chart, you look at it, you have a set of criteria. Almost any physician can do this. They don't have to be internist or family doc. They can be pretty much any. And it's pretty low risk. It doesn't take any kind of risk from the standpoint of liability. And you can get good at it and make a decent living working 5, 10, 15 hours a week.
Oh, wow. And I don't have to touch anybody. Don't have to have an office. I'm just reviewing the chart.
Exactly.
And, well, that sounds like something that augmented intelligence will grab within a matter of hours of our conversation.
It might. Let me mention some others. I don't know how you're, what you're going to think about the second one here, because some of us have a bad taste in our mouth about, I would say, non-physician providers, mid-levels, well,
it's not,
whatever.
It's not selling plasma, is it?
No. being a collaborating doctor. Now, this one, you have to be licensed, you know, to do it, but there are organizations that you can work for that it will have you just supervise PAs and or NPs, depending on what's going on, remotely, so that they can do their thing. For some states, it's actually allowing them to practice it some semi-independently. And even some states where they have the nurses, you know, obviously the NPs have the ability to practice independently, many of them actually want to have a collaborative agreement also. So you can do that remotely. There's companies that you can go to. And the other thing is, some people that do telemedicine actually do this kind of collaboration on the side simultaneously, because it's just the availability. You don't really get called that often. So you can be available while doing some types of telemedicine that don't require you to be, you know, if you're asynchronous, for example. So that sounds like something that's pretty low risk and pretty easy to get into.
Well, everybody feels better with a deep pocket in the background.
That's true.
That's all I can hear is a bell in my head going ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Hang on a second.
A little bit of risk there in that.
Especially
one.
If I've never met the person.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Now, I suppose you could spend an hour or so, or, you know, and do some of those remote consultations and collaboration on video and get to know the person. But yeah, it's not for everybody. But I know there's actually, I keep seeing these new companies cropping up promoting this. So it's there if it's something you need or want.
I would think that with state licensure and privileges expanding for APPs across the country, that there is a need for that kind of service for a backup doctor. And I would expect it to be virtual, but I would also want to definitely cover my legal part, if you know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. with some sort of interview or evaluation process so that I know who I'm backing up.
Yeah, and I have not partaken of this particular opportunity, but I'm pretty sure there's a huge demand. That's why these companies keep showing up, and you just see a lot of people more on the non-physician part looking for that supervision. It's kind of a rate limiting step for them. So,
right.
You know, maybe that means we can get paid more doing it, you know, if there's that much demand. But all right. How about another one? These are getting a little bit more esoteric.
Well, I have a quick question. Do I get paid by the hour for being backup, or do I get paid by the call when they ask me for an opinion as I'm backup? How does it get paid?
So it's basically boils down to an hourly rate. What it is a contract rate for so many hours for each week. And so, yeah,
gotcha.
Whether you get a call every hour or you get one call a day, you get that contracted amount.
It's a retainer priced hourly.
Yeah.
Got it.
All right. Here's an interesting one. Have you ever heard of medical device regulatory consulting?
Oh, my. No.
So just like drugs through the FDA. I mean, those things are obviously regulated. Of course, in the US, the FDA regulates medical devices. In the EU, European Union, it's actually a separate monitoring by this, was regulated by the MDR, medical device regulations. And so that started 3 years ago, and there's a huge demand for physicians to be trained in how to do medical device regulatory consulting. And they're called medical affairs associates. Now, most of it is done in the EU, but oddly enough, they like to hire American physicians to do this because they're much more familiar with the FDA and medical device regulations than they are in the EU, because this is all relatively new. And there happens to be a person I know that was a guest on my podcast a few years ago who trains physicians from all over the world to do this. And he also then hires them to do the job for his company. So this is all in the UK. But when I spoke with him, he said, yeah, I mean, they actually prefer some of the US physicians. Now, many of the physicians that come to me because they're looking for a different job, or maybe they've never worked clinically here because they're foreign medical grads. So they may have lived in the EU and now are here in the US. And this is like an ideal job for them because they're very familiar with the system. So medical device regulatory consulting or advising is another one.
What is it that I do as a consultant slash advisor?
So you have to complete various documentation and you do reviews of the studies that were created to justify the initial application for the medical device.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like being a technical writer for pharma, you know, where you're pulling everything together and then putting the information in, both for the regulators and then also for the patients.
Well, I would say jump in quick because AI is going to take that one off your hands in a matter of hours as well. That's what it's good for, right? That's what it's good. One of the reasons that AI works really well for certain things, and one of them is summarizing research, volumes of research. Feed it the articles and have it give you a 10-point bullet summary. ChatGPT can do that in less than 30 seconds. Maybe you can use ChatGPT to do your job
That's what I'm thinking.
These analysis.
Let them do the hard part, and then you put your personal touch on it and edit it. So, okay, now I've got another one. This is probably the last one that's maybe that I would mention today, just because these are a little esoteric, but this one is a little closer to home. So have you ever heard of medical, legal, pre-litigation consulting?
Figuring out whether or not to take the case. Yes, I have heard of that.
Okay. So this is basically that, but it involves other things too, because it's not used in any like liability cases. This is all used in personal injury, workers' comp, auto accidents. So the nice thing I like about it is it's kind of your own business. It's a freelance thing. It's like doing telemedicine or some other freelance job, and it pays well, and pretty much any physician can do it. You, long as you can, you know, read the articles in the background in terms of the state of the art for a certain treatment, and you go through medical records, you organize them. There's some nurses that do some of this medical records organizing for attorneys now, but this is the next step because you can give opinions in terms of what you think the cause of the illness or injury, you know, what is the root cause? Was it related to the accident? Was it not? What's the expected treatment requirements going on long term and so forth and so on. So I don't know. I've been intrigued by that. I thought about doing that myself, but have not pulled the trigger on it.
Well, and if you think about the dynamics of that particular position, you're going to be given a sheaf of cases and asked by the lawyers, which one should we invest our time and energy on taking to court? And if you do a good job and the things that you touch turn to gold, you're going to ride that one for a while.
Yeah. And that just figuring out what's worth pursuing, what's not. And then also improving or increasing the payments and the support for the patient at the end of the day. So, I mean, you are helping patients indirectly by doing this. You know what happens when someone gets an injury in an accident or something, they always focus on the most severe one. And sometimes you don't even see all of the secondary and tertiary results of the accident until weeks or months later. And then you need a specialist, a physician who can sort of sort through that, what's related, what's not. So that's what I find intriguing about it.
Interesting. And
it's remote for the most part. You can do it remote. A lot of people do it just in their local communities, but you can definitely do most of this remotely. And sometimes you actually have to interview the patient as part of that, the client of the attorney that you're working for. And you can do most of those remotely as well, because you're just getting the history. You're not actually doing an exam at all.
Deposition. Yes, yes, yes. And then let me also put in a plug here. These are all side gigs and part-time gigs that you would take for money. You would get paid. It's part of the reason why some people say, well, I want to make a little cash or I need to make a little cash. Mm-hmm. These would be options. But there are literally within 10 miles of where you're sitting right now, dear listener, thousands of opportunities for you to work as a volunteer in your community Or you can even go Medicine Sans Frontier. You can go to Doctors Without Borders and go to war zones all over the world. There's thousands of organizations that would take you as a medical professional, local homeless shelter, the food bank, anything like that, right? And with your intellect, your thought process, your problem-solving abilities, any board in town would take you as a volunteer member for sure. Everybody wants a doctor on their board. As soon as you put yourself out there as available because you're no longer working 100 hours a week, everybody's going to want you. And hopefully, when you're considering this decision to retire, you also have reached that level of financial freedom where you don't actually have to make money. I hope that that's true for you. Again, dear listener, I'll just put that out there.
I want to put my two cents in on that because I've been a hospice board member for over 10 years. I was a hospital board member. I gave that up a while ago. I was on the local county health board. I was a president of the board. I mean, all those things, and they're all volunteer positions, obviously. It was fun. And you're actually applying your medical knowledge plus your business knowledge plus, you know, just your common sense. So I would second that 100%.
So when it comes time to give back, there's plenty of ways to do that. All you have to do is get out of the house and go look for opportunity.
Do I have to get out of the house? I don't like leaving.
Well, those are typically, you know, bad coffee and stale donuts and early morning meetings, right?
Yes, that's right. So, I mean, there's lots of other things you can do. I think you have to keep an open mind and say, look, okay, do I just want to like stop working and sit home and watch football and baseball and other TV shows? Or do I want to think about doing something that's going to meet some of my needs, financial, intellectual, personal, whatever? I think there's lots of options out there. No one teaches us this in medical school or residency, but I think there's more than you can imagine.
Yeah. One of the things that I did in advance of this particular conversation, since I'm very interested in the peri-retirement period too, I'm 65 years old, had a stroke in December. So I had a shot across my bow. I know that nobody gets out of here alive for sure. And I've been looking at that. And if you look at on the internet, if you search physician retirement, what you're going to find is two things. Financial planners who think that the only thing you need to worry about is money, and locums agencies that want to hire you as a locums. But what about your heart? What about your spirit? What about your soul? What about the journey, the adventure that you started when you said yes to applying to medical school and where it's led you to this point? The ups and downs, the ins and outs, the comedy, the tragedy, the joy, the sorrow. And how do you stick the landing on a life of purpose? That's what's approaching at this point in time. And one of the words I want to put into this conversation is legacy. Legacy. Do you have a desire, or could you awaken a desire to make a difference on this planet in the time after you're physically gone? And one of the things that's interesting about doctors is a wealth of experience, knowledge, and typically a pretty nice net worth in the 1%, I would hope. And you potentially could either by yourself or with colleagues, other physicians, other retirees, create a real legacy of some sort. Whatever is your favorite way to give into the future, this is the time when you can think about doing those kinds of things, so that sticking the landing is not necessarily hanging up your delivery shoes. And if you delivered a bunch of babies like me, you know what I'm talking about. Your delivery shoes and fading into the woodwork. Legacy is an option. Stick the landing. The final chapter on a life of purpose. So I wanted to just stick that in there too.
Sounds good. Sounds like a good plan.
Now, you were talking too about a conference that's coming up. Tell us about this conference.
All right. Well, my colleague, Tom Davis, and I last year put on a summit, and we decided we were going to repeat it again. And last year, we focused a lot on non-clinical jobs, you know, really pretty hardcore non-clinical jobs. But this year, we're going to do something a little different. Its title is Clinical Practice, Make It Great or Move On. So it starts from the beginning. And luckily, we have you to talk about one of the first steps, which is whether, you know, your dissatisfaction is due to medicine, or is it just due to your job? Is it due to your boss? Is it due to something else? And then what should you do about it? And then we have 11 other speakers talking about things like how to really make your business and practice successful, the legal aspects, the how to run a cash-only business if you want to do cash-only practice, actually. Then we get a little more esoteric and get into med spa. And I don't know if you've heard of infusion lounges, but we got somebody talking about that. I'm not sure what to think about that, but I guess we're going to find out.
Is that that IV truck in Vegas for when you have a hangover, that one?
Not that one. And these are fixed clinics that, okay. Yeah, yeah. But that's probably one aspect of it. So anyway, this conference, this summit this year, we call it a summit because summits have a reputation of you can come and watch it for free. You can participate for free. You can ask questions. A lot of them are recorded ahead of time. Ours isn't. We're doing it live on Zoom. We're actually doing it as a Zoom meeting. So it's not the most sophisticated, but it worked great last year. And you can come and learn a lot of things, be exposed to a lot for free. And it's happening in April for 3 evenings. The first time I did this, I thought, what was I thinking? 4 hours a night, 3 nights in a row, and praying that Zoom isn't going to crash. But it was a lot of fun, actually. And we had a good positive feedback on it. So we've asked a lot of excellent speakers like you to come and share their expertise. And hopefully some of your listeners and followers will get some use out of it.
I'm going to be 6:30 Pacific time on Tuesday, the 16th of April. And we're going to be talking about, is it really time to retire, or is your jerk boss and that toxic culture at your workplace actually driving you out and there's a better place for you right now? Zoom meetings, it's important to realize the difference between a webinar and a meeting is that in a meeting, anybody can turn on their mic and ask a question. The chat's visible to everybody. It's totally open. I don't do webinars personally. All of my presentations are meetings because of that ability to communicate. So it's the best format, I think. And let's see, how do I register?
So you go to nonclinicalsummit.com.
Great. And we'll put that link in the show notes, nonclinicalsummit.com. And then the deal is participation is free. And if you want access to all the recordings, there's a payment option to do that too.
It's extremely expensive, $39. So,
you know. Oh my God.
But it does go up if you wait too long, but you can get it for $39, which is what people did last year. But that was great. I'm glad people.
You can spend that much on 2 Subway footlongs. Oh, that's all I got to nope. say, unless it's on the app. Right on. So non-clinical careers, retirement and the peri-retirement period, part-time, side gig, volunteer, legacy, and sticking the landing on a life of purpose. That's very cool. Thank you, Dr. John Jerica. What is it again? Non-clinical summit.
Non-clinical. No, it's non-clinical career summit.
Non-clinicalcareersummit.com. And again, we'll put the link in the show notes. That's it for now. Till I see you or hear you on the next Physicians on Purpose podcast. Keep breathing. Have a great rest of your day.